Time Wolf Electronic Recording Productions presents Bionicast, Twerpcast Episode 7 Million. This Twerpcast is bigger, stronger, and faster than previous Twerpcasts. The Office of Scientific Investigations has set our budget at $6 million. We require your assistance, your vigilance, and your submission. Do not change your podcast. Do not change your underpants. Sit back and enjoy. Today, I'd like to introduce you to the creator of the new Bionic Woman, Ronald D. Moore. As he was unavailable at the time of recording, please welcome again Jim Caswell, executive producer in charge of pedantic minutiae, so mind-numbing even his stench can't keep you awake.
And I'd like to introduce Doug Zeilin, the poncho to my Zorro, the tonto to my Tarzan.
As long as I'm not Jane to your Tarzan, I'm fine with it.
Welcome to the show, everybody. As Doug stated, this is our Bionicast, where we will not only talk about the history of the Bionic franchise, but are also privileged to provide you with an advanced preview of the upcoming NBC series, The Bionic Woman.
I think it's appropriate to start with the books by Martin Caden. For those of you in the know, The $6 Million Man was actually based on a series of books in the 1970s. These were called Cyborg, Operation Nuke, High Crystal, and Cyborg 4. These four books could be considered the pulp adventures of a government killing machine.
There were significant differences between the Steve Austin described in the Cyborg books and the Steve Austin that ended up making it to the small screen.
No poison darts firing from his fingertips.
But, as neither one of us have read the books, that's really all that we can say on the matter. So, let's move on to what we do have experience with, and that's the TV shows. Never let it be said that we prepare too much for a Twerpcast.
So, Steve Austin, the $6 million man. Wouldn't really buy you very much these days, would it?
No, it wouldn't, but we'll get to that in a minute. Oftentimes better known as the Bionic Man, Steve Austin's exploits were very famous back in the 1970s. An astronaut who crashes back to Earth has to be rebuilt to become stronger, faster, over-dramatizing. I mean, the series was launched in 1973 with three pilot films. The success of those three TV movies led to a five-season life on ABC. As we said earlier, there were several changes as the book was translated into television.
I guess you could say it was made a little bit more family-friendly.
For one, the Steve Austin on TV rarely ever killed anybody. Usually, if he killed someone, it was either by accident or...
it was really a robot.
Yeah. They could kill as many robots as they wanted. Crunch all you want. They'll make more. He also had stronger bionics, and, well, his eye was just cooler. His eye was able to do more fancy things, plus he didn't have to pop it out of the eye socket in order to download it.
Ew.
Only when you get the sound going. Now, the $6 million man, much like a lot of television in the 1970s, was actually quite campy. There are many prime examples of the high levels of camp involved in the $6 million man. For example, do you remember Barney Hiller, the second Bionic Man? Or as I like to refer to him, the obligatory evil twin?
I guess I just have to say, back in the 70s, they expected a lot more suspension of disbelief. They expected you to believe that a man with one bionic arm could physically pull a helicopter down with that arm, and no leverage.
As opposed to just being lifted up off the ground because, well, he was normal human weight and he had no leverage.
Suspension of disbelief.
And we're actually pretty good at the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, we actually believe people listen to the show.
There are times that those levels of disbelief get tested and torn and ripped to shreds. But this is Bionicast. We're not talking about Flash Gordon.
For those who haven't listened to HeroCast, the TV series, I will reiterate our pocket pen protectors. Doug, zero pens. Jim, one pen. Avoid flash at all costs.
This has been a public service announcement from your friends at Twerpcast.
Now back to our regular scheduled programming, the Bionic Cast.
As we said, back in the 1970s, camp was almost expected in television shows. Therefore, nobody really objected to it. It was good, clean fun. It was such good, clean fun, in fact, that merchandising sprung forth from this series. You had lunchboxes, action figures.
I still have my 12-inch Mego action figure. It's got the little plastic arm that rolls up so you can see the bionics in there. You can stick your eye behind Steve Austin's head and you see, like, the little red target through there. Really cool.
between Steve Austin, Charlie's Angels, and Batman, every kid in elementary school had a lunchbox. But the merchandising did not stop there. Wherever you have a hit, you have to have a spin-off. Enter Jamie Summers. Jamie was a professional tennis player who was briefly romantically involved with Steve Austin when a skydiving accident caused her to become the next bionic agent of the OSI, the Bionic Woman.
Bionic Woman aired on ABC from 1976 to 1977, and then crossed over to the offices at NBC in 1977 and 1978. This was the same OSI, and other characters to come along were the director of OSI, Oscar Goldman, and the creator of the Bionic Woman, Rudy Wells.
This was an oddity even for back then. It's unheard of today for two studios to work closely enough together to have the same characters being played on two different series on two different networks, and to have regular crossovers between the two series. It was not unheard of for Steve Austin and Jamie Summers to be teaming up.
So it's a little bit different feel. Still a campy television show, but they're being a little more socially conscious. They're bringing out a little bit more women's rights, ERA, women's lib, into the mixture now.
Jamie Summers is Steve Austin's equal. In power, in strength, in action, she holds her own just like he does.
This is making me think of something else. JossCast, TorpCast Episode 1, where we talk about shows that have strong female lead characters that start on one network and move to another network.
Yes, there is a little bit of deja vu there. Now, this is still the 70s, and they could only let her be so independent. She still mooned over either Steve or the male guest of the episode.
Like Evel Knievel? I'm not kidding. Evel Knievel was a guest star.
But when push came to shove, she shoved them out of the way, and she took charge.
1978 marks the end of the Bionic Woman television show, but not of the Bionic universe. Bionic Woman introduced another Bionic character named Maximilian, a German Shepherd with $1 million worth of Bionics in him. Somebody thought it was such a great character that a failed spin-off, The Bionic Dog, starring Christopher Knight, never happened.
Yes, Christopher Knight playing Bobby. What do you think they had been watching? But that wasn't the only juices that were cooking in the minds of those executives. On the $6 million man, they introduced the Bionic Boy, a young man who suffered a crippling accident, who was played by Vincent Van Patten. Yes, he was one of those Van Pattens.
However, even time cannot keep a good Bionic man down. And in 1987, TV saw Return of the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman.
As we said, camp was pretty well accepted in the 1970s. People almost expected it in their television shows, especially something that dealt with such a science fiction, superhero-type genre. They expected camp. They still had very vivid memories of the Batman TV show. But by the time you hit the 80s, there was a change in the mentality of a lot of television viewers. They expected something a little bit more actiony, a little bit less campy. Yes, the A-Team had its own little level of camp, but it was a different brand of camp. It had a different flavor, a different feel to it. It's the sour cream and onion flavored camp, as opposed to the barbecue.
In trying to reinvent the franchise, Lee Majors decided to bring his son along.
Lee Majors Jr.
Now, son of the Bionic Man was not Lee Majors Jr.
There was a Michael Austin, but he was not played by Lee Majors Jr.
It was actually Oscar Goldman's replacement character, the next director of the OSI that was being played by Lee Majors Jr.
Return had that level of campiness, only it had kind of grown a little stale after a decade. Didn't have that same fresh feel. Wow, with all this talk that I've been doing, you get the feeling I'm hungry.
To be honest with you, as a fan of the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman, I really enjoyed the Return of special. To your point, it kept the feeling of the originals. These were the original characters. These were the original actors. That they did an incredible job of recapturing a feeling. Whether or not it was appropriate in 1987, I suppose, is debatable, but it was still a thoroughly enjoyable movie.
Oh, I have very fond memories of these as well. It was like having old friends come back to visit.
The Return of the $6 Million Man and the Bionic Woman did so well in the ratings that there was a following of return of shows, Return to Mayberry. There were two or three more Brady Bunch movies that came out with the original actors in them. There was a return of the original Get Smart actors, guest starring John DeLancey as the bad guy.
6 degrees of Star Trek.
Even the television show What's Happening was able to rekindle and get a What's Happening Now. It really did marvels for the nostalgia crowd. So much so that a second movie, The Bionic Showdown, came out 2 years later in 1989.
This featured the debut of
a really wonderful, really talented, unknown actress
by the name of Sandra Bullock. Now, I'm sure at this stage in her career, Bionic Showdown has probably fallen off of her resume. But playing Kate Mason in Bionic Showdown was an excellent first step for her.
I'd still say that this show kept the campy feeling. However, by 1989, the technology was considerably different than the 1972 book Cyborg. So they really tried to take some modern science and explain why these bionics worked. Why could Sandra Bullock run over 100 miles an hour? She had nanomachines in her body, and that her spine had been reinforced. And there was a bunch of technical mumbo-jumbo in there, but they tried to make it more authentic.
Unfortunately, unlike a lot of today's shows, they didn't bother bringing in a scientist to act as a technical supervisor. So a lot of their dialogue explaining this stuff was, how should I say, bad?
Unbelievable?
Ridiculous.
Unable to suspend disbelief.
Bad. But, you know, it still didn't stop those of us who really did enjoy the franchise from accepting it and just kind of going with the flow.
Now, at this point, with the Bionic Showdown, they've introduced the new Bionic Man, Michael Austin, the new Bionic Woman, Kate Mason. I was secretly hoping for another $6 million Man Bionic Woman movie with the new characters in them.
There was a definite feel that there should have been a new series launched. They had new actors. They could have had the Bionic Man, the Next Generation.
I completely agree. However, even though the fan base might have liked another series, I have a feeling that the producers and the actors were ready to put the Bionic Man and Bionic Woman to rest. That didn't stop them from giving us one last look at the Bionic couple in Bionic Ever After.
A good portion of the reason this was made was because the actor who played Oscar Goldman was entered into a contract for 3 movies. They didn't necessarily have to uphold that contract, but he was contracted for 3 movies. So they figured, what the heck, we've got them all on contract, let's make one more. Let's tie up all the loose ends.
They did a pretty good job of putting a final episode together. A nice farewell movie. Steve Austin, Jamie Summers, they get married. It's the end. That's all there is of the Bionic story.
Until 2007. On September 26th, a new series is being launched as part of NBC's fall lineup.
Oh, so is this going to be camp like the 70s?
Oh, no. No way. This is put together by the same people who reimagined Battlestar Galactica. They've taken a popular show from the 70s, reimagined it for the new millennium, given it a whole new flavor, and launched it.
All kidding aside, Jim and I have managed to see a pre-screening of the Bionic Woman pilot. Let me ask you, Jim, is this a good reimagining of the original series?
Yes. This is a fantastic reimagining of the series. They've done a wonderful job of putting Jamie Summers on her own. There is no Steve Austin here. There is no Bionic Man. It's launching just with Jamie Summers on her own. And this is a much different Jamie Summers. She's not a tennis pro. She's a bartender. She's not a single woman about town. She's essentially playing mother to her 15-year-old sister, involved in a serious relationship, and just trying to lead an average life.
When I heard that the reimagineers of the Battlestar Galactica series were going to recreate the Bionic Woman, I just had a nasty stomach ache. I was like, how could they do this? I did not hate what they did to Battlestar Galactica. I just didn't love it. The new Battlestar Galactica gets all sorts of critical acclaim, gets a lot of fan support, but to be honest with you, I personally find it to be a mediocre television series at best. It's not really good science fiction, and it's not really good drama. It's mediocrity. The new Bionic Woman is not mediocrity at all. It is spectacular. And that's not to say it's an original concept. It's just a redone concept done extremely well.
Not to go back and start kicking that horse that we killed last time, but in comparison to the most recent remake that we've seen, it is far and away a much better take on characterization. It has much better writing. The special effects are better, although there were a couple of times where we were really hoping that...
what we saw was a pre-release version, so the special effects may just have been
a work in progress, which is fine. We're willing to accept that. And even if that is the final special effects, they were still better than the stuff in Flash Gordon.
For those of you who have not yet seen the new series Flash Gordon, if you want to see how not to remake a television series, feel free to watch that as a what not to do. If, however, you want to see television done really well, drama that keeps you on the edge of your seat, acting that you're willing to suspend disbelief, directing that is absolutely incredible, cinematography that is silver screen quality, The Bionic Woman is the show to go with.
As we said, this isn't the same Jamie Summers. If they had tried to make this Jamie Summers into a tennis pro, professional athlete, a marathon runner, it wouldn't have worked. The everyman feel that they give her works quite well.
Absolutely. So here is a character that the audience can relate to. Jamie Summers is this college dropout working in a bar to support herself and her little sister. She could be anybody. She happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time in this terrible accident, and extremely lucky that she doesn't know her boyfriend happens to be a bionic engineer.
He takes her back to the lab, he rebuilds her, and when she realizes what's happened to her, she freaks out.
She does just the perfect job of portraying what might be running through the audience's mind. She is our window into this secret world. So Jim, how do you feel about Michelle Ryan and her portrayal of Jamie Summers?
I was very impressed. In order to run a show, I mean, the show is called The Bionic Woman. The show is about her. The ensemble cast that stand behind her are just that. They're the ensemble behind her. It's completely on her shoulders to carry this show. If she's unbelievable, if she's less than, the show is not going to make it. She does a wonderful job of carrying the show. She's very believable, she's very identifiable, and she makes it very easy to see through her eyes. And not like the little 12-inch doll that Doug was talking about earlier.
This bionic woman has so much going for it. The dialogue is so well written, the story is so tight and so well told, that it probably would have been hard for her to make it really bad. Fortunately for us, she didn't try. I've never seen this actress before, and she just floored me. I can tell that she has the dramatic range, the acting chops, and the ability to hold us on the edge of our seats week after week.
Now, Jamie Summers is not the only character that has gotten changed. Due to some copyright issues and other ideas that are floating around out there in Hollywood land, characters like Rudy Wells and Oscar Goldman just weren't available to be used. So instead, they had to create some new characters. One of those characters is Jonas Bledsoe. He is the new director of this top-secret organization, and he's played by Miguel Ferrer. I was very glad to see him bounce into a new series after the cancellation of Crossing Jordan. I think he is that good of an actor. But the question that I'd like to pose to you is, who is the better director, Oscar or Jonas?
To your point of Miguel Ferrer, he crossed my radar screen in 1987 as a baddie in the RoboCop movie. And I have enjoyed watching him in everything he has done ever since then, whether he plays a good guy or the bad guy. So I'm very happy to see him in the show. Also, he's a cousin to George Clooney. Just one of those little twerp facts. Who is a better director? Honestly, I would have to say Oscar Goldman is the better director. He really was a manager of people. He was a people person and somebody that you can look up to. Jonas is, well, he's an asshole. He's just one of those people that you go, he's an asshole, but he's our asshole. And I think that that's the way he is written, and that's the way he's acted. So I don't have a problem with that. I love the character. I have nothing against it. But if the question is who is a better director, it would be Oscar Goldman.
Now, I will admit that that was a bit of a trick question. The fact of the matter is that these are two completely different organizations. For the OSI, as was established in the 1970s, Oscar Goldman was the perfect man for the job. Well, as you said, he was a people person, he got along with everybody. When push came to shove, he knew how to play dirty. Let's face facts. But all in all, he was a nice guy. He's the type of guy that you'd bring over to your house for Sunday dinner just because he was a nice boss to work for. But in the new series, this is not our father's OSI. This is a darker, grittier black ops organization. They believe in playing dirty, and they don't care who knows that they play dirty. For an organization like this, Oscar Goldman would get chewed up and spit out alive. Jonas is the right guy to be leading this organization.
See, but the thing is, if Oscar Goldman were leading this organization, they wouldn't be the type of organization that chews you up and spits you out. They would be a different organization.
At the same time, they didn't bring in Rudy. They have three new trainers that take part in the creation of the Bionic Woman. They are Will, Jamie's boyfriend and the Bionic Genius, Jay, who is the military black ops, I'm going to train you how to kill people 20 different ways with your pinky, and Ruth, the psychologist who is trying to help Jamie deal with the changes that have taken place in her life.
Again, as part of the reimagination process, this is something that brings it a little closer home and a little more realistic, as opposed to having the single entity who is your trainer, your doctor, your counselor. They actually bring in people who do have these specialties in their background. It gives you a little more chance for drama. We know she has a good relationship with her doctor that's her boyfriend. Okay, so there's an ethical dilemma about medical practitioners having their own relations as their patients. Yeah, I get that. However, like, her trainer, she may not like her trainer at all. And there could be this love-hate relationship type of a thing going there.
And going back to the doctor for just a second, remember that he just gave her a major operation that she never okayed, and things did seem a little stressed there for a while.
I agree, and I think that that's what they're trying to build, are these little tensions and drama. There's nobody to hate yet, except for perhaps Jonas. And even, he's not evil, he's just not a nice guy.
He's likable in that despicable sort of way.
Like I said, he may be an asshole, but he's our asshole.
As you said, this is a lot more believable. And I like the fact that they are going to clearly establish something of a third dimension to these characters. While Rudy was nice and all, he was really kind of two-dimensional, and he was like the scanner. He was just there when he was needed, and you never got a feeling as to what more there was to him other than being in that lab. They've already established all of these characters as having something else going on besides being there when Jamie needs something. Not to draw too many comparisons to the 1970s show, but audiences expect a lot more out of their television shows in this day and age than they did back then. They expect character development. They expect
continuity.
They expect some drama in the characters' lives.
Actually, to go right to the 1970s comparison, we had in $6 Million Man, the evil twin, Barney Hiller. This show introduces Sarah Corvus, the evil Bionic Woman.
Again, they do a very good job of developing this character. From the moment you see her on the screen for the very first time, there is no doubt in your mind that this is a bad guy. And they never put a question in your head throughout the entire show. You know she's bad. There may be questions as to why she's bad.
That would be my only disagreement. There is still a mystery about what is her agenda. They've introduced a couple of characters that you know have an alternate agenda. You just don't know what that is.
But there is no question that Sarah has gone over to the dark side.
I agree with that is the intent of this pilot episode. However, just from previous experience with this creative team, we may eventually be led to the question, which side really is the dark side?
And I wouldn't put it past them to give her options at redemption. Pulling a Darth Vader, if you would. Speaking on Sarah, she is played by the wonderful Katie Stackhoff.
Apologies if we've mispronounced her name.
Who plays Starbuck on Battlestar Galactica. With that in mind, the actress herself drew a comparison between the character of Sarah and the character of Six from BSG. And after seeing the pilot, I can understand where that commonality concept is based. Sarah has a great deal of sex appeal. She has no problem in using that to her advantage, and she's fairly ruthless in its application.
It's hard for me to discuss, because my knee-jerk reaction is to say, no, these characters are diametrically opposed. There's nothing alike about them. Until you break it down to the point that they're both robotic, they're both on the other side, they both have the same sex appeal. There's so much about the characters that really are similar that you want to say, yep, she really is just the same character moved into another TV show.
By saying that there were similarities, that does not mean that they are the same character. Sarah Corvus is a very different character from Six. As far as the commonalities go, you could say, well, they're both blonde. It's just something that they have in common. the reasoning behind the character, the application of the acting, Sarah is a different character. She is not Six in another series.
She really isn't. I mean, the differences may seem minute, but they're very important.
Sarah has a level of humanity that Six only dreams of having.
And I think that is the key. Thank you so very much. The character of Six on Battlestar Galactica, as close to human as they're trying to show the Cylons, is just a thinking machine. She thinks. She calculates. Yes, they show that she has some sort of love interest in Baltar, but then her actions are these very calculated, specific actions towards this love. It's not the unexpected things that people do when they're in love. It's first A, then B, then C. When we look at the character of Sarah, you can tell, even though she's a robot, everything she's doing is emotional. And that makes her unpredictable.
The terms that you used there are a great description of it. Six is a robot. Sarah is a cyborg. She is still human underneath all the machinery. She has human foibles. She has human emotions. She doesn't know what to do with her human emotions. And if they end up leading towards opportunities for redemption, it's going to be that level of humanity that they're going to be drawing upon.
Again, to use the comparison between the two shows, the robots in Battlestar Galactica are trying to become more and more human, whereas Sarah Corvus specifically says in the episodes that the parts that were not replaced by the OSI, or whatever their military group is, she's replacing them on her own. She didn't want one bionic eye, she wanted two bionic eyes.
Six wants to become human. Sarah wants to get rid of her humanity because it hurts too much. In finishing up the character of Sarah, it was very nice to see the appearance of Aaron Douglas in the episode as well. It's very nice to know that when Battlestar Galactica goes off the air after this next year, the actors have some place to go. They will always have work.
I do completely agree with that feeling. My first impression that how much I enjoyed this pilot episode of Bionic Woman, I would compare to how much I enjoyed watching Heroes last year. I just said, this is the greatest show ever. And maybe they won't have that same audience appeal that Heroes has, but I'm hoping that it has that same staying power that Heroes has, and it will have many seasons where some of the old actors and the old cast and crew from the Battlestar Galactica can come over and continue their appearances and continue their work.
Which actually brings me to a question that was asked on episode 5 of Torpcast. Is this a sign of what's to come now that Heroes has become popular? Is this an example of the superhero show made well?
Absolutely. We've kind of distinguished that there's two types of superhero shows. The traditional superhero shows with Superman and the cape and the tights, and the non-traditional superhero show like in Heroes, where they're just everyday people who happen to have special abilities. And I think this is definitely in the tradition of Heroes, where Jamie Summers is an everyday person. We can see through her eyes, we can relate to her. She just happens to be three-quarters robot.
Speaking of those three-quarters, obviously the special effects are far different from in the 1970s. The technology that's become available, the advances in science that have been made in the past 35 years, takes the special effects to a new level. I guess the question that needs to be posed is, do you miss the da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na?
Two-part answer. Absolutely. I really do miss them. However, they have no place in this series. The da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, it was part of the camp appeal of the $6 million man and the bionic woman. This series is done straight. If you're going to have, like, metal sound effects, it'll be like metal grating sound effects. You're not going to have these created on the synthesizer sound effects. And I miss it. I miss that camp appeal, but it's not necessary.
It would almost make for a great dream sequence, but that's about the only place that it would fit in here.
I have a thought that I would like to share on this after we give our Pocket Protector ratings.
Before we hit that, though, there is one last question that needs to be asked. We mentioned the fact that the 1970s Bionic Woman was seen as a bit of a leader in the women's rights movement. She wasn't just there for sex appeal. She wasn't there just to be good arm candy. But she was a modern woman doing a modern woman's job in this environment. While this Jamie Summers is an independent woman taking care of her sister, working her job, is she really a pioneer? Or is she a good representative of what was spawned from the 1970s?
As far as being a leader, Jamie Summers is not that. She's not a Nobel laureate. She's not a professor. She's not a rocket scientist or an astronaut.
She's not even the first bionic woman.
That's a very good point. But she doesn't have to be. One of the things that I think they've done so well is make her an every woman. Effectively, she is a single mother working as a bartender. We don't know that bartender was actually the only job she had. She was supporting herself. She was supporting her sister.
And upholding a stable relationship. They say that her and Will have been dating for 5.5 months.
I don't think they've tried in any way to demean this character and say that she's working in a strip club for her money, or this is the only thing a woman can do to support her family type of a role. Basically, they're saying she is a strong, independent woman who can take care of her family, be in a strong relationship. She doesn't have to be a Nobel laureate or a CEO of a company.
I think she is a very good example of an everyday woman in the 21st century.
Actually, you could go so far as to argue that she is a superhero. As a single woman, she's able to hold down her job. She's able to take care of her younger sister. She's in a happy, stable relationship. Really, what more super is there about anybody? I think we run the risk of discussing the episode longer than the episode actually ran. So before we get to that point, how many pens in the pocket protector would you give it?
On the scale of 4 pens, I definitely give it 3.5. I'll run the risk of flooding the pen protector with ink. That's not to say that I don't think it was a great episode. I probably would give it 4, but I'm holding off that half pen for hopes that they can actually exceed my expectations for the future.
That's pretty hard to follow, Jim. I was going to say 4 pens in the pocket protector, and then we could say, well, if it doesn't stay as good, we could take away a pen. I think I'm going to have to go with 3.5 pens and say, yes, if this is an excellent series and the only room it has for growth is to get even better.
Remember, The Bionic Woman debuts September 26th at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. Now, you wanted to make a final statement after we rated it.
Okay. Speaking of missing the da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na and the campiness and everything that's going on, were you aware that Jim Carrey was thinking about doing a $6 million movie?
Unfortunately, yes, I was. The intent was to make a parody of The $6 Million Man. And unfortunately, just because Jim Carrey is no longer attached to it, doesn't mean that people aren't still thinking about doing it. Now, their concept is that $6 million just doesn't buy what it used to.
It's like deja vu.
That he truly is a $6 million man, as opposed to, as they stated in the show, the new Jamie Summers cost roughly $50 million to get all of the bionics that she has in. So their concept was to make a show where his bionics are very low quality and probably break down a lot.
Oh, they got him from Bionics R Us.
Yeah, something like that. And to make a joke out of the concept of a $6 million man.
My thought, therefore, is if you want to have the old sound effects, the old special effects, a parody movie would be the appropriate place to put them.
If that's the only place that they could find to put the da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na and the slow motion running and all the nice campy little effects that we think of so fondly when we think of the 1970s shows, I can live with just the memories.
Well, Jim, thanks for the memories today.
As usual, we're going to give you a brief update as to what else is going on with Timewell Electronic Recording Productions. On the Eras front, no, we haven't released Act 1 yet. We appreciate your patience, and we really do hope to have Act 1 out by the end of the month. Real life gets in the way of fun things, as you may know. As far as IMON 4 and NX-01 go, preliminary recordings have been finished. We're doing some pickups over the next week or two, and then we'll be going into editing. We should still be on target for a December release.
We would like to thank you for listening today to Bionicast, Torpcast Episode 7. As always, Time Warp Electronic Radio Productions encourages your feedback. Please write Jim at TorpOnline.net.
Torpcast is a production of Time Warp Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2007.
Da na 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 na.